Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is glass artist and designer Eric Hilton. Hilton was born in Scotland and educated at Edinburgh College. His award-winning work has been exhibited all over the world, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago, Otari Memorial Art Museum in Japan, and the Corning Museum of Glass. His commissions have included sculptures for Cornell University, design work for Steuben Glass, sculpture for the National Golf Hall of Fame in St. Augustine, Florida, and many commissions from London galleries and manufacturers. Welcome to the show.
It's a great pleasure to be here.
Now, Eric, I want to begin with the beginning. In an earlier interview, I heard that you said you started drawing as a wee boy, and you don't know what would have happened to you if you hadn't started drawing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've always seemed to have an inclination to make things and look at things and put it down in some way or another. But my life started in a kind of different way, because we were actually bombed out of London in the Second World War and went back to live in Scotland. And we lived in a rather, on the fringes of an industrial area with rural environment beyond. And I used to go for walks as a child into these woodlands, and I would come home and start drawing maps of where I had been.
Uh-huh.
And I think my mother would have gone nuts if she had seen me climbing trees, trying to do things that children always do. But for all these years of my young life, I was always drawing and fiddling around with putting things together. You must remember that Britain was in a devastated state after the Second World War, and there was no toys around or what have you, so you started building your own stuff. It was so different in these days to now, where things tend to be clipped together in parts. And in my time, you would take two-dimensional forms and build them into three-dimensional forms and have to try to learn how these things went together.
Wow, that's an amazing beginning for you. So how did you eventually segue into glass?
That was curiosity. When I passed through the higher school education and went on to... See, Scotland's not a big country, and there was actually three art colleges in Scotland.
Mm.
Glasgow, Edinburgh, and Dundee. And I applied to Edinburgh and was lucky enough to get in. And I went through the usual prerequisites of an art college for the first 2 years in general art education. And then in the third and fourth year, you were allowed to specialize in something.
Uh-huh.
Specialize in a number of things if you wanted to. But it was a pretty stringent education. I used to think that life drawing was a bit like pre-med, because you had to learn all the origins and insertions of muscles. And you would go there, and for a whole day, you would be drawing the human form. And then they would have exams and tests as such.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the whole gamut of the art experience, right through from still life, painting, the crafts, as they were called.
Mm-hmm.
But out of pure curiosity, a friend of mine came one day, one of my art friends. He said, you know, I've been downstairs and there's a glass department down there. You should come and have a look at it. So it was just pure curiosity. I went down, somehow fell in love with the material. Although I've got to emphasize at this point, it is just another material.
It is. I mean, it is.
You know, I hear all this stuff about, oh, the material speaks to me. And I suppose it does in a kind of way, but you're still in control of it all. And you're dictating, because it is an inanimate thing.
Uh-huh. So glass captured your imagination for some reason. To tell us what it was. Was it the play on light, or the way you could shape it?
When I went to Edinburgh, they had no hot glass processes like they have now, like the furnace and blown
mm-hmm.
glass. So it was all cold processes with sandblasting, cutting, carving, and engraving.
Wow.
So there you were often using geometric forms that integrated light into the substance of the being of the piece. Of course, the thoughts of illusion came up in one's mind, because if you take something like a simple cube and you make a mark on it, miraculously the mark appears somewhere else in space.
Mm-hmm.
So the cube actually is trying to extend itself beyond its physical boundaries as an illusion. So if you multiply these together, you begin to have a very complex composition of different kinds of imagery.
Uh-huh. And so you discovered this as you went along, or is this something you were always trying to achieve as an artist?
Let me discover it.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm sure I was aware of it looking in water, like when you go and put your feet in the sea, they somehow extend out in a peculiar direction before your own body.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, glass is like a super cold, it is a super cold liquid.
Uh-huh.
So in its purest sense, like an optical crystal, it has all these properties of a liquid that's frozen in time and space.
Uh-huh. And it can make things look like illusions or bigger than they are.
Well, you can enter worlds beyond mm-hmm. your human consciousness, and I think that's what art is basically about. I remember going into a museum or a gallery once, I should say, and seeing one of Van Gogh's sunflowers. painting of a sunflower.
Oh, yeah.
And I have never been able to look at a sunflower in the same way again, because he entered the soul of that flower in some way in his own mind's eye and presented it to us. And that's what I feel about art, is when you go into these places to look at art, it should move you as a slightly different person when you leave.
Mm-hmm.
You're not quite the same. And it's the same with poetry and music. All these things are a denominator of creativity that link together.
Uh-huh.
And I feel they ought to be linked more closely together educationally.
Yeah.
Instead of being subdivided into boxes for our convenience to teach them.
I know. You must be somebody who's upset about the fact that the art seems to be, you know, leaving the education system,
well,
let alone expanding on being able to bring all the arts together.
Well,
you know?
I mean, you've only got half an hour, so I don't want to get in my high horse about that whole thing.
Tell us what your process is, though. I mean, when you're thinking about doing something in glass, do you draw first?
I'm really influenced by a lot of things. I'm influenced by the natural world. Obviously, I do a lot of photography and do a lot of video, and did do film before video became such a pronounced tool. And this influence has created me not to particularly copy the natural world, although I obviously do that through the process when I was working for Steuben, but it's more orchestrating and synthesizing it and taking the essences of it into some form. Often I somehow see something twinkling out there beckoning to be made. But then the challenge is, when you start down that road, it's going to take you on a merry track.
Uh-huh. So you never exactly know what you're going to come up with.
Well, strangely enough, although there's a lot of mechanics involved in the making of some sculptural piece, it's still got reminiscences of painting.
Mm.
For example, when you're painting, you change and modify. You stare at that blank canvas for a moment with a panic in your heart and you make a mark on it.
Uh-huh.
So you've already created something within the boundaries of that rectangle or whatever shape that is. And that leads to associations. And it's the same with any art project, or these associations that built together into a whole. Whatever that thing is. And that thing has to go beyond craft. It's got to have its integrity. It's got to have its beckoning. It's got to have the possibilities of urging you to think deeper than the superficial.
Uh-huh.
It's not just a pretty ship upon a painted ocean, because art in its true sense challenges mankind. See, I believe it's the soul of humanity.
Uh-huh.
Creativity is.
Uh-huh.
Art being one of that parts to the soul. And that's why it's so vitally important in the development and education of the young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you about that. Now, I've always found glass mysterious. Do you feel like it's alive and,
yeah,
and actually does have a soul itself?
Well, I think it sometimes totally behaves like that. You know, I don't blow glass, personally. I sort of tried, and I realized I wasn't going to be that good at it. So what I've done for all these number of years is I've designed for it, and I make things in the cold process and kiln work and sagging and modifying and manipulating it, but I don't actually blow it. And if I need something blown, I go to some of my friends who are absolutely excellent at that, and we discuss the possibilities. So in glass making, there's a tremendous amount of reciprocity between people and teamwork. And it's so amazing how they seem to link together in a blowing room.
And yet one thinks of artists as having to sit in rooms alone to come up with their concepts and their ideas. But working with glass is a group art in some ways.
It is a group art, although I do sit alone thinking about things. Like I'm seeing that, I think you mentioned earlier, this business of drawing, and drawing is absolutely vital to me. To get that degree at Edinburgh, you had to be able to draw or you wouldn't have got your degree.
Uh-huh.
And it definitely has extended the possibilities of one seeing things. And the neat thing about drawing is it takes you away from technology.
Yeah, that's what
Where
I
you're dealing with yep. objects and materials, you're dealing with how things fit together for different kinds of purposes. But in drawing, it's you and this pencil and your hand and your brain. One of the experiments, because in 17 years of teaching in art colleges and universities, before I got hooked into Steuben, I used to teach foundation study programs and MFA and BFA programs in different aspects of these. But foundation study was really exciting because it had to do with concepts and ideas from the student within a framework that would become manifest perhaps in a material. So the material had to be, as it were, linked to these concepts and ideas.
Ah.
And that was really exciting because you never quite knew what materials would be appropriate. Rather than going to say, I'm going to make this in glass, It might have ended up that way, but it might have ended up in wood and clay and all sorts of other connections. And that's what foundation study was always about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about some of your titles, which are absolutely fascinating. Portal to Infinity, Inner Land. These are beautiful. Celestial Diamond. Mm-hmm. Did you name things after you've created them, or do you have those titles in mind and then create from them?
Well, I love to read poetry, and I must confess I sometimes get influenced to the point of saying, my God, I love what that woman has said or that man has said, uh-huh. and adapt something from that to perhaps a meaning behind the piece. I mean, a portal is obviously an entrance into mm-hmm. perhaps mystery. So Innerland, for example, which is one of the largest pieces that I ever conceived and made, first Steuben, with the help of a number of excellent craftsmen at Steuben, is in the masterwork collection in the Corning Museum of Glass. And that is a cubic structure that takes you on a journey through life, an abstract pastoral life form.
And it's huge too, isn't it?
Well, it's quite big. This is the peculiar thing. It's not as huge as you might think, but it's the illusion of scale. And apparently it's a really favorite piece in the museum because you can't get near enough it for children.
So because you're gathering around.
The child enters it in his mind's eye. I remember when I was working on it, somebody said, well, why is there no human figure engraved into this cubic form? I said, no, you create your own scale. You can either be in interstellar space looking down on this thing, or you can be crawling like an ant through it.
Ah.
I mean, we used to do an interesting conceptual experiment with the kids, or the students in foundation study, where they built periscopes and decided that they were going to be 10 feet tall for a day, or ants crawling across the ground by strapping these on themselves.
What a great exercise.
That was in Alfred. That was at the State University of New York
wow.
at Alfred. I think the town people thought we were absolutely nuts.
Well, your piece, Innerland, reminds me of outer space. I haven't seen it in person. I've only seen photos
of it. Well, you must go down and have a look at it.
I thought it looked like alien worlds. It was like somebody's, a science fiction fantasy of what Mars might look like if it had been inhabited.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's the interaction with, you see, it's a simple cubic form. But mm-hmm. all the stuff that's going on in it with the cuts and diagonals and shapes and refraction of light, there's all these rainbows dance within it through refracted light. They magically move, so you've got this reciprocity between you and the object as you move. And you may use the word alive, but it's you that's alive.
Yeah.
And because you move around it, you rediscover, like Alice through the looking glass, you enter one corridor that opens another door, like science does. Recently, apparently, we've discovered this massive galaxy, the largest that's ever been seen. Mm-hmm. It's so incredible, the myths that human beings create and the science and discoveries that human beings find. Mm-hmm. It's quite phenomenal. That's what makes art so interesting.
Oh, art is an amazing. I know it. Yeah. I agree with you that it does reflect the soul of humankind. Now you worked for Steuben Glass for a long time. Were you mainly doing commission stuff, or were you doing creative stuff as well?
I did everything.
And tell us, I mean, what's the difference to you? You know,
it's a different mindset. It's a totally different mindset from being in a university to going to work for a corporation. Mm-hmm. Although I must say to you that the man who found me, as it were, and persuaded me to go and work for Steuben, although for 30-odd years I was never in the company, I was always a consultant, contractor, mm-hmm. artist.
Mm-hmm.
It was Tom Buechner, who is quite a famous artist, who recently passed on, and he was an absolute genius, and he was the CEO for Steuben. And I remember the first time he met me by chance at Alfred. He was showing some people around, and I was demonstrating to some of the students about loading a kiln and putting glass in it and fusing it and what have you. And he said to me, are you Eric Hilton? I said, yes, sort of, who are you kind of thing. And he said, my name's Tom Buechner. And it dawned on me who he really was. And he says, look, I've seen your work down in New York in some of the galleries, so would you like to come over to Steuben and let's have a wee chat about the possibilities? Well, needless to say, I touched my ample forelock and said, when? And got it all together and went to see him. But I should have known the difference between a university and a corporation, because there I am, I had quite long hair, an embroidered shirt, and Tom had to give me a loan of a tie to get into the executive dining room to have a meal and discuss these possible projects.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Eric Hilton. He's a glass artist and designer. I want to ask you, are you still finding yourself incredibly influenced by the beautiful landscapes in Scotland and then that kind of thing, even though you now live in pretty much live in New York.
Well,
most
I guess
the time.
Once you've been a Scot, it's difficult to shake it off.
Well, it's a
you know,
beautiful country,
you've got to
though.
Remember it's 7 o'clock on New Year's Eve. It's midnight in Scotland, so that may be necessary to take a little refreshment at that time.
Uh-huh.
But no, I there's a little family home on the north coast of Scotland that looks out to the North Atlantic in Sutherland. It was a place where the Vikings settled and ravaged the population. And it looks out to these uninhabited islands, one of them called Island Rowan, where the seals give birth to their young.
Yes, they made that film, the Rowan
That was a different, that was Ireland.
Oh,
but
that was Ireland,
yeah,
that's
it was
right.
But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's the same kind of culture.
Uh-huh.
And it's full of myths and tales and stories. And there's these Neolithic stone circles. Out in the Hebrides, there's one that sits there. And I'll never forget once I walked across to these stones. It's like Stonehenge, but not quite so large.
Mm.
And on one side, there was an inland sea, and there was all these yellow primroses, wild yellow primroses. And on the other side, there was about 50 white swans in a freshwater loch.
Wow.
And you walked across, and you touched these monoliths and the lichen on them, and they're 4,000 years ago, they were put there, and you wonder who these people were. That's why it's so vital, this business of art.
Uh-huh.
I've been in Reims Cathedral and walked into the main aisle of the cathedral, and all the stones are bent over 500 years of people walking into that cathedral.
Wow.
It's
magic,
so amazing.
It? Yeah.
It's magical. There's a place near the house called Ardnechy, and this is two U-shaped beach forms that look like horseshoes. And on one side there's large round rocks, oval rocks, and on the other side, the seaward side, there's tiny wee pebbles. And you wonder how many thousands of millions of tides it's taken to form these. Where was the what was it like in these days? What were the people, if there was any?
And so you're thinking about all this stuff when you're doing your art,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
when
well, that's why you said about Innerland
exactly,
and the fact
yeah.
that it's all there. That's why there's so many stories behind the work.
As somebody who has taught art, can you tell when there's this divide between somebody just learning the craft and then becoming a real artist? Do you see that?
Well, there is that incredible difference that you have to be really careful with making pronouncements about.
No, but I was just wondering if you see it. You don't have to make pronouncements to students necessarily,
I mean,
but
no,
can you
see
that artist evolving?
I think what I was trying to say, there's some incredibly beautiful things made that are craft, but they might miss a certain point altogether.
Uh-huh.
There's some things that are crudely made that are not good craftsmanship, but their integrity is incredible.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You mix this all up into what is art, which you can never quite absolutely say. But yes, you can see in certain people a tremendous ability, like my daughter. She is quite an amazing artist, and from the word go, I think when she was born, the first thing to arrive was a paintbrush.
Sounds like you with the drawing.
Like the drawings. Yeah, she definitely inherited that gene. But my son Kyle, he's into writing and theater. So, I mean, I think they're both got the plague.
The creative plague.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the glass art is going to become a lost art in this culture? I know a lot of people are worried about certain disciplines.
Glass art?
Yeah.
Oh, it hasn't become lost.
No, do you think it will, though?
No, I think it's one of the strongest forms of expression because you just need to go to these galleries. You need to go to the Glass Art Society conferences in Corning. There's one to be had, become manifest in Toledo this year. There's these huge galleries. I've been in collectors' houses that you wonder where they sleep.
Wow.
I've been in collectors' houses where the glass is 8 to 10 feet tall, huge castings of glass sculptures. You go to the show on the Chicago Pier, and there's this incredible show of major galleries in the world that come there with all sorts of different crafts and what have you.
Oh,
and glass
good.
Is one of the highest. And actually, it fetches the top prices, too, when it's being sold.
So it's still valued in
the
world.
Oh, it's incredibly valued.
That's
it's
good
a different
to know.
Thing.
Because you see these companies, you know, evolving into something or going out of business.
That's different.
And then that's a...
These are individual artists that have studios, and they've got people working for them. I mean, Dale Chihuly is a famous example. I mean, he's everywhere on the news and all around. And, I mean, Dale Chihuly has promoted the glass movement to a terrific degree. Mm-hmm. I knew him when he taught at RISD, and now he's got major work all over the world.
Well, that's great to know. I love that. I worry about the arts because of
don't worry about
the way
glass.
It's not valued in the schools so often.
I mean, the reasons for Steuben collapsing is totally different to what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's a corporation, but you must remember that Corning Glass needs amazing accolades for all these years that it helps sustain Steuben. It created something that wasn't ever before in this country.
Mm-hmm.
It created new forms of glass that hadn't been generated before, before the glass movement started.
Yeah.
And they involved major artists from different parts of the world to come to Steuben and create things.
Yeah.
And it was the Houghton family that did this.
Yeah, yeah, very famous for that.
Very
indeed.
Famous, yeah, and that's how I met Tom Buechner, as I said.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fact that you designed the glass bowl for the Merchant Ivory film.
Right.
I thought that was a fascinating fact from your biography. Tell us how that happened.
Well, what actually happened was I've done quite a number of special commissions for Steuben. And along came the possibilities from the outside world of coming to Steuben to ask if such a thing could be created. So we designed this in a medieval way with gold leaf that hadn't actually been put on Steuben in recent years. And we engraved and formed this bowl. But I mean, I've done so many of these because this was one of the things about Steuben. Gifts were given to heads of state by heads of state. One I did that President Reagan gave to Mitterrand in France at the re-inauguration of the Statue of Liberty was an abstract American flag. It's quite funny because here's a wee Scotsman drawing up an American flag on a bowl. But anyway, and another one that I did was the friendship between Britain and the United States to be given to the Queen. That was an engraving which had the American and the British flag intertwining and the lion and the eagle
mm-hmm.
Sitting there with the different crests and what have you. That was exciting. So
wow.
The Queen, Zevi Blum, who used to be at Cornell, did a piece that was given to Prince Charles, marriage of Princess Di. So all over the place, there's royals and people of high esteem.
Still valuing glass
valued
art.
Valued with this thing.
Well, when you're asked to do something like that, do you have the freedom to design it, or do they hand you a design? And
well, that's the interesting thing between running your own joys and working for a corporation.
Uh-huh.
When Tom Buechner was president, we had often utter freedom. He used to say, you guys create it, and we'll sell it.
Mm.
That was one of his attitudes. And I know it didn't always work, but we were given freedom. The biggest one, actually, in my memory, was one where three artists, Peter Aldridge, David Dowler, and myself, were given a year's freedom to make whatever we want. The factory was turned over to us, and we made all these outrageous pieces of sculpture in crystal. And they were shown in the Heller Gallery down in New York, and it was called Breaking the Mold, which meant this was the first time that Steuben had moved outside the parameters of its own store to have it in a public in a private gallery.
Wow, that's
and
that's
every
amazing
piece sold.
Freedom.
Every piece sold.
So did you learn something about your own creativity by being able
I
to do that for
years? I learned humility.
Really?
When I went to Steuben for the first time, here I was all pumped up by my own possibilities, and I walked in there, and this was after, I say, 17 years of teaching in art college, and I walked in with the freedom to design for this amazing company, and I suddenly realized how incredibly talented all these people that worked there were, how they made things out of nothing to make things of something. And these were just beautiful people that just were working for a living, and it made one really humble to say, what's this pumped up artist think he's at? If you know what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Is it hard for do you consider yourself a freelancer now? Because I wanted to ask you about marketing and having to sell yourself, because I've talked to so many artists and they say that's the hardest thing in the world to have to do that.
It really is a hard thing.
Uh-huh.
It is. I mean, the web has helped somewhat, because in the old days there was nothing like that. I mean, one has to a degree, rely on galleries. I mean, I was recently asked to be in the Chance Gallery in Stockbridge, and I sold a piece there. And then there's the Habitat Gallery, and I used to be in the Heller Gallery, although I'm not there anymore. But it's not easy, and of course I have to confess that the Steuben salary helped a lot in being able to create my own work, because one could subsidize the other to a degree. Now that I'm no longer there, then I obviously have to be put on another veil. But, see, there's another issue here that's happened that's kind of exciting. When Steuben finally ended, a friend of mine bought 5,000 pounds of Steuben glass.
Wow.
And we have it stored, and we're hoping to open up another aspect, a branch. Although we can't use the Steuben name, we can still use the Steuben glass. So there are a number of possibilities in corporations that haven't been fulfilled of orders that they asked from Steuben before it closed. See, Steuben was sold by Corning to another company.
Indeed, I know.
And
that,
it was run for 3 years, and it gradually fell down. Except I must say that the best part of it were these special commissions that came through where I was involved. And one of the most exciting ones I did at the very end was for a Saudi prince who was in Manhattan, walked into Steuben and asked if there was a possibility of having his photographs embedded in crystal.
Wow.
So I had done a number of pieces before where I had taken film and had embedded it and bonded it into geometric forms. I did one for Paul McCartney, which was about banning landmines, and he was going to give this to all his friends in Hollywood. And this was two slabs of glass with a painting of his of a hand held up against landmines. And we took a film of this and took the actual transparencies and bonded it in between two layers of glass. And then optically evolved the glass so you had this strange thing happening to the hands. Well, that, since it worked, I used this technique to bond the Saudi prince's photographs into this piece of sculpture that we did. That was like a jigsaw puzzle, because a lot of my work is like a jigsaw puzzle. It all goes together into a whole, and sometimes it's quite involved to put these things together. So we put it all together, we put it in this crate, and we shipped it to Saudi Arabia. We haven't heard a thing since.
Really?
No, well, actually Steuben closed, and we all thought, we'll get a couple of tickets to Saudi Arabia to put this thing together. So I have a feeling it's going to be found millennia from now in a sand dune somewhere by some aliens or something, and they'll wonder what the heck it really is.
Oh, my gosh.
It's quite exciting.
That's great, Eric. Now, we only have a couple of minutes. I wanted to ask you about future projects you're working on. Are you working actively on anything at the moment?
Yeah, I'm working on two pieces right now for Habitat International. This is a major international that happens where they ask about 90 artists from different parts of the world. So I'm just put a new sandblaster in my studio. Sandblasting, we could talk about that for another half hour, but it's quite involved, and I'm trying to get that together. And I have this real infrastructure of local people who are incredible artisans who help me in certain aspects of these things, where I ask them to make certain parts that I've designed. There's an incredible chap down in Watkins Glen. He's a British, and he's a woodworker. And there's another gentleman up at Lansing who has his own machine shop, and we all work together on some of these pieces when I'm doing the glass parts and they're working together. It's like I may not make the whole piece. An architect doesn't build his whole building.
Yeah, a lot of painters and artists have collaborated like that too.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you will have some new pieces coming out soon.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
That's
definitely
great.
Working on that. And I will, hopefully, as they say in Scotland, if we're spared, there will be a lot more.
Well, I hope so. Eric Hilton, thank you so much for joining us. And do you have some contact information you can give out to people?
Well, I have an unfinished website. It's called hiltonglass.com, and up will come a central image in one of these innerland pieces, and then if they click on artwork, there'll be a whole row of images, and if they click on them, they'll get a flavour of what I've been, as they say in Scotland, havering on about, and be able to actually see the pieces.
That's great. Go look at his work. Eric Hilton, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much, and just keep doing what you're doing.
I've really enjoyed myself, Tish. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.